Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
San Antonio District Judge resigns after a federal corruption probe.
A former San Antonio, Texas judge goes to federal prison after pleading guilty to accepting bribes in exchange for rigging cases in his court. Angus McGinty committed the ultimate judicial sin. Why did you do it?
I did it because I was foolish.
Listen to How to Bribe a Judge on RevolverPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Oh!
Down goes Duffy out cold. Frank Mir does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, all right, well, these are the fun ones. I mean, this is what it's all about. Oof. It's Monday, September 21st, 2020, where Ken Flo is, where I am. It's Tuesday, September 22nd, year still 2020. It's 2 o'clock in the morning here in Abu Dhabi. Good to have you with us. Episode 268 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. Ken Flo coming to you live from Meraki BJJ there in Santa Monica, California, I believe. What's up, kid?
Yes, sir. Here in Santa Monica, California, and excited to talk about these fights, man. This is such a great card. I've been looking forward to this card for a long time. You are a very busy man, my friend. When did you get into Abu Dhabi?
So it's hard for me to answer those questions. Like, I really
yeah,
don't
2 days
even know.
Ago, but 3 days
was,
ago?
Yeah, it was the morning. Yeah. I'm in the middle of a 48-hour quarantine right now. So right. I slept from 5 p.m. to about 10:30 p.m., got up to prepare the podcast, and wow. Here we are. So, yeah, I mean, this is not going to be my cleanest episode of that, I can assure you. But a lot to get to today, obviously, and we'll start with headlines, and we'll recap Covington Woodley. And I'm dying to know what you think about Adesanya Costa and which side of that fight you are going to fall on. And we know you keep picking your friends, so it didn't work out for you with Tyron Woodley. Kepler's got to stop picking his friends if he wants to win the main event challenge. I mean, that's how
leave me alone, man. No, leave me alone.
It. And hey, you know, I think there was value on Tyron at plus 290 in some respects if he had really gone for it. But let's talk about this main event and shine the spotlight on Colby Covington for being the elite welterweight that he is. And I just feel like his style is supremely problematic for a lot of fighters. He was able to get a TKO against Tyron Woodley. Gilbert Burns and Kamaru Usman can't lay claim to that. I know it was because of a broken rib in some part, but Covington, a very hard guy to put away, a tremendous pressure game. I do like his alignment with MMA Masters. What did you think of Covington's performance against T-Wood?
This was another classic Colby Covington performance that was backed by motivation, hunger, energy, a willingness to try to get back and try to get another shot at Kamaru Usman. You know, I'm just blown away by his ability to keep a pace for 20, 25 minutes and actually get stronger as the fight goes on. It's unbelievable. And I thought it was a really clean performance from him. Did he actually get hit with big shots? I don't know if he did. And I thought he was able to really take Tyron Woodley completely out of his game. I don't know if Tyron's performance was really backed by energy, motivation, hunger necessarily, but either way, it does not matter. You go in there with what you have, and Colby Covington was just playing better than Tyron Woodley that night. And he looked like a guy who might be able to get that belt in that very difficult division.
there's a mental toughness, Kenny, to this kid that really jumps out at me. And even going into the Robbie Lawler fight, he had a nasty cut that really limited his ability to spar. And the kid goes out and throws 541 strikes over 25 minutes. Now, I don't believe he's had a knockdown since 2016. I think Cody Mero sent me that stat over the weekend, right? So I saw a lot of power in the Kamaru Usman fight. But Kamaru was able to eat those shots, so maybe that isn't power. You know, people have called him pillow-fisted in the past. I don't necessarily see it that way, but I think there are a lot of competitive matchups for Colby Covington because Gilbert Burns is going to be next for Kamaru Usman. Who would you like to see Colby face? I mean, for me, I don't know if the Leon Edwards fight is going to happen. Jorge Masvidal makes a lot of sense. But for me and Colby Covington right now, if it's not going to be a title shot, it's got to be one of those two guys, Gamebred or Leon Edwards, right?
I think so. You know, as far as excitement level, I mean, clearly the Jorge Masvidal fight would be huge just based on that whole story between those two. They looked like they were best friends at one point. Now they are bitter enemies. And who doesn't love that storyline? Yeah. I think people always get excited about that. And I think that would really deliver as far as, you know, where both those guys are in their careers right now. So I think that's a fight that makes a whole lot of sense. Leon Edwards, obviously a fantastic fighter. And I think it would be another great fight against Colby Covington. But as far as, you know, are we talking about the business of fighting of fighting, Jorge Masvidal, probably makes more sense for someone like Colby Covington.
I've told this story on this show before, but once I was flying from Miami to Dallas and I was sitting in coach right behind Colby Covington and Jorge Masvidal. Gamebred was in the middle seat. Colby was on the aisle. Best of friends. I mean, really close, those two. So that backdrop now, I think, makes for a super compelling matchup. Leon Edwards just might be the most avoided man at 170 pounds right now. So I do hope that a big fight materializes for him. Quickly, I just want to acknowledge the MMA Masters coaches before we move on to some other things Covington and Woodley related. Daniel Valverde, in terms of his Brazilian jiu-jitsu, Ken Flo, I know you respect it, and the judo as well. And then Cesar Carneiro, his Muay Thai and striking coach. You know, Amanda Nunes, it's not out of the realm of possibility that she stays with MMA Masters and goes on to become the greatest women's mixed martial arts athlete of all time. And I do think that you're under this American Top Team cloud in South Florida, and it's hard to sort of get credit. So I just kind of wanted to acknowledge those two guys off the top. I don't know if you have anything to add on that, but I think Colby deserves credit for making a quick pivot. He knew that perhaps Poirier and other guys really were going to lay down the law in terms of his return to American Top Team. So he leaves and found the right guys.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before where, you know, sometimes being a big name fighter, being at a big name gym doesn't always mesh well. What we're looking for a lot of times when we're looking for a good camp is attention. It is having a lot of coaches that are going to cater their schedule and their training for you. When you're at a lot of these big gyms, it's hard to get the attention of the coaches and get the times that you want. And being in these big rooms where everyone's training and doing the same thing, it might not be the best thing for you. So I think once you get more money and you have the ability to kind of really make these very training specific type camps, I think that's always going to benefit the fighter. And I think in this case, being over at MMA Masters, Colby can definitely get way more attention than he probably would at ATT. And obviously he was having, you know, it goes a lot deeper than just that. I think obviously there's a lot of controversy over, you know, what he was saying and his beef with the other fighters. But I do think that if we're going to judge him on this performance and how he's working with MMA Masters and how that's going, I think I would give him a solid A on what we saw.
Pretty seamless transition. And I will also say Nate Diaz might be my favorite fighter on the roster, but a fight between Covington and Masvidal right now, to me, seems exponentially more compelling than a rematch between Gamebred and Nathan Diaz. Tyron Woodley, I don't know if it's the painkillers, Kenny, but he seems to be in a pretty good emotional place right now, despite the fact that he hasn't won a mixed martial arts round in 2 years, dating to the Darren Till fight. What are your thoughts on T. Wood? You know, he was born April 7th, 1982. He's 38 years old. The show money's still pretty good. I think this would be a pretty sour note on which to go out. You think we'll see at least one more from T. Wood or what?
I imagine that he would probably like to get at least one more in there. You know, Tyron has been wildly successful both in and out of the cage, but I think that if I'm a fighter, I wouldn't want to end my career on that one necessarily. Now, if he doesn't want to fight and he doesn't have that same kind of motivation and hunger to move forward, then I don't know if that's the best idea. Now, I said this on the last podcast, and I say this with love because I really do love Tyron. He's an awesome individual, a great human being, and a fantastic fighter, obviously, with everything that he's accomplished. But if you can't get up and perform against someone like a Colby Covington, and you can't let your hands go, and that's been kind of the knock on Tyron right. The last few fights, and you can't do that for someone like Colby Covington, then maybe it is time to hang it up. Because, again, at the end of the day, and this is where I'm coming from, I don't want to see any fighter, let alone a guy that I'm, you know, that I really admire, get hurt in the octagon. It's just not the place to be. If your mindset isn't 100% on fighting and being hungry and going out there to kick some ass, if you're not in that mindset, you shouldn't be in the octagon. It's not for you. You're going to get hurt. He's got a family to worry about. I know there's a lot of other things outside of the octagon that he wants to do and that he can do because he is a very smart guy. Why put yourself through that? Why put yourself through that? He's already been a champion in this sport, and I feel like the trigger just isn't being pulled at this point, and that concerns me.
You're speaking a lot of truths as usual, and I don't believe he was necessarily willing to be knocked out on a napkin in the center of the octagon and be twitching on the canvas in this type of rivalry matchup. And some would argue in his last two fights, there's been a lot of conservatism that has defined those performances as well. But I did think, you know, someone asked me from a betting perspective, I said, you know, Covington plus 500 by knockout might be enticing. Because T. Wood could go for it and get knocked out, you know, but largely he was hesitant once again for whatever reason. And a good dude that we respect a lot, obviously. And we'll see what's next for T. Wood. All right. Longo coming up in about 3 minutes. First, though, Khamzat Chimaev. I have a funny feeling this will be the last time you don't see him in a co-main event or a main event. I think there are a lot of pay-per-view dates in his future. And people who think that this is solely promotional hyperbole and not a ton of UFC championship ability, you're just not paying attention. I mean, Kemflo, Dominic Cruz and I spent 25 minutes talking about this right hand after the fact. The speed with which he got that hand to the target was pretty incredible. That's what Dominic was most impressed with. I know you've got plenty of things to wax poetic on the biggest breakout star of 2020.
Well, first of all, I love the fact that he went out there and got it done on the feet, right? Because we knew that was a possibility from him. But this just adds yet another scary wrinkle in his game. And again, for me, that's a natural 170 pounder. That's a dude who's a welterweight. And he's going up in weight against a guy who has way more experience than him and just starched him. One shot, sat him on his ass. And it was crazy. You know, again, I don't think Mearshart did himself any favors. It seemed like Gerald was intimidated. He backed him up, put himself in a bad spot, saw the punch coming, and then really didn't do too much about it. Now, there's a fast punch coming on the other side of things, but defensively, Mearshart just didn't do himself any favors. I thought it was Mearshart's ability to or a lack of ability of defending himself properly. And also, if you're going out there and you're talking trash a little bit back and you're trying to get in Chimaev's head and you're saying certain things, I mean, at least do something, man. Like, bite the guy, scratch him, something. Right. Like, you know, it looked like he was, like, really hesitant in letting Chimaev just run the dance on him. And you can't do that as a professional fighter, especially a dude who's smaller than you. Like, you're going to let that smaller guy bully you? Either way, Chimaev is a powerful individual who went out there and won that fight with an exclamation point. The bad thing, just to wrap this up a little bit, okay?
Yeah.
He's unbelievable. But still, I wanted to have a little bit more information, little bit more intel on Chimaev. He's not letting us get more information because he's fucking destroying everybody way too quickly. So the great thing is, he's got some stand-up. The bad thing is, I'm not sure if we have any more information other than knockout power on Khamzat. So I think that story is still unfolding before us, and I think we'll find out way more information with this fight against Damian Maia.
All right, let me give you some information, at least what I have, that you might find of interest. So he wanted the towel for the weigh-in, right? But ultimately, he got to the scale. He was 185.5, I believe, and he didn't need it, okay?
Yep.
And I agree with you. I think that he is a welterweight fighter, but I don't think it's going to be super easy for him to be making 71 five, six, seven, eight, nine times turnaround. Necessarily. Frame-wise, though, he's bigger than you think, I would say. But okay. Also, he wasn't necessarily in the midst of a training camp here, right? You know, like this happened very quickly. He had to get his ass to Las Vegas. So I am supremely confident if he gets a couple weeks, 4 or 6 weeks for Damian Maia at 170 pounds, the aesthetic for me when he shows up on weigh-in day will be different. But this is not a small welterweight. This guy's got some size and the confidence. Unbelievable, this 26-year-old man just trotting out there, all the pressure in the world, minus 450 favorite. And we're going to see more in the future, but the early returns on Khamzat Chimaev are quite good, and we will certainly get Longo's take on Boars. He might have to change his nickname to Smash here in the not-too-distant future, but support for the Anakin Florian podcast comes from the official electric razor of UFC Manscaped. Manscaped truly has everything you need to keep your package nice and tidy. It is the best company in the world when it comes to men's below-the-belt grooming. My Lawnmower 3.0 is with me here in the United Arab Emirates right now, and I'm not afraid to admit it. Manscaped has also partnered with a lot of top-tier MMA athletes, Brian T-City Ortega among them. He fights here on Fight Island. Fight Island, many others who understand that hygiene matters. They also know what it takes to be the best. And so does this revolutionary men's grooming company, Manscaped. They just redesigned the Lawnmower 3.0, featuring a great ceramic blade with proprietary advanced skin-safe technology. I'm telling you, accidents are going to become a thing of the past. And big picture, if you're out there and you're viewing this or you're watching, you're listening, if you're a man, you're using that same trimmer on your face that you're using down there, like, is that what you're doing? Because we don't want you doing that. So, if you don't want to do that anymore and you want 20% off with free shipping, go to manscaped.com right now and use the promo code AF. That's promo code AF for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. All right, let's get to Raymond Peter Longo.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
You know, this fucking guy's got a lot of nerve. Thanks to Steve Lee for coming in and successfully getting Ray Longo on Skype. But we do this live to tape, like a live radio show, essentially. So Longo was supposed to be on the air 8 minutes ago. So when he has time, Ken Flo, to sit his ass down in that chair, then he will join us for the rest of the Ray Longo Minute. But we were talking about Khamzat Chimaev, who loves to strike, right? Yeah. I mean, the grappling credentials, obviously never lost a minute or whatever on the wrestling mats, but he likes to strike and certainly has a pretty potent right hand. I mean, what do you think they're going to do with him? I mean, he looks ready for top five competition to me. I mean, some think that's a stretch. If not top five, he's certainly going to get somebody in that top 10 or 12. Maybe Maya. What do you think about the immediate future for Chimaev?
You know, I'm always of the side of caution or just kind of slowing your roll a little bit, even though Chimaev is showing some high level skills, you still need that experience. And I think having that experience is what's going to allow you to really not only get the belt, but hold on to that belt for a long time. I'm not saying he can't do it already. It's possible that he is just that damn good. But from what we've seen, he's got the skills. There's no doubt about it. He has the mindset. What he doesn't have is the experience. So I think, you know, taking the right fights, building up his resume a little bit, getting that octagon time, because right now he's winning, but he's not getting octagon time because he's just smoking everybody. So yeah, I do think that he could start to fight against the guys who are in the top 15, no doubt about it, maybe even the top 10. And I start salivating when I think about him against a Kamaru Usman. And what gets me even more excited is him against Israel Adesanya. Right. You talk about matchups, dude. I mean, how do you not give him a chance based on his wrestling skill and his ability to be able to deal with the striking? So there's just a lot of upside on him. I'm really curious to see what the UFC does.
And dude, if you want me to slow my roll on Khamzat Chimaev, I will. What he does have now is the third fastest knockout in UFC middleweight history. But I look at like Reza Madadi, right? UFC veteran and Alexander Gustafsson. His coaches and teammates on social media are responding to these performances like, dude, you're not human. Like, holy shit, we got a UFC champion on our hands. Like, I think they knew early on. We told the story on last week's show about how he went to Stockholm, Sweden and took himself to All-Stars and the rest is history. But I think they know they have somebody very special. And there are a lot of guys in that middleweight top five who are like, yeah, come get some. But I just think it's a fascinating story right now. And in terms of the press conference, hey,
holy,
nice to see you.
Oh, nice of you to show up, Ray.
Hey, I need a bathroom break. Sorry, that might be the first of many today.
Well, I like the longer lineman t-shirt. About the only excuse that would have passed would have been a bathroom break. We are live. It's nice to see you. Thank God for Steve Lee.
Steve Lee saved the day. What was the problem?
I don't know what the problem is. I know solution is that you're in the seat now. So we were just ripping. We already played the Ray Longo minute drop. We've just been waiting.
I wasn't here.
Yeah. Did the listeners really want to know? Did the listeners want to know why Ray wasn't on this?
Longo's taking his shit. Where is he? Hey, come on, guys. What do you got to have?
Ray is looking how to turn on his Wi-Fi because that's why he wasn't available on the show.
You look lighter. You look lighter, by the way. You look great.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
So it's 2:30 in the morning here on Fight Island. I've spent a lot of time with your buddy Matt Serra, at least prior to the 48-hour quarantine.
Sorry to hear that. Sorry to hear that. Did he tell you the same story over and over again? He doesn't eat the gluten. I don't eat the gluten. I'm gluten free. Is it gluten free? Gluten. Is that what you heard?
I've heard that gluten story a lot at this point. I've heard all about it because
he's what's known in the business as a repeater.
Every time I talk about pizza in a positive way, he brings me down with this gluten-free cauliflower crust nonsense. So before you came on, Ray, we were talking about Khamzat Chimaev, and you cornered Chris Weidman to several middleweight championship title fight wins in the UFC. And I think Kenny and I feel like Chimaev is a more natural champion at 70, but he still is a big guy for welterweight for me. But are you as bullish on Khamzat Chimaev as maybe I am, or are you waiting to see a little bit more?
No, after the other night, I'm definitely bullish on him for sure. I really wanted to see him get tested a little bit. I thought Mershot would, I wanted to see him hit a little adversity, see what he had. But I'll tell you one thing, man, he's got the desire. He looks like he's got everything. I mean, even though it was short, man, that was a beautiful right hand. He's not hesitating. So the things that we saw in a short period of time from this guy are really, really good. So he's definitely coming to fight. Doesn't look like he's going away easy. And I think that's a huge, huge thing for him.
So Kenny and Ray, I know he was short-winded with me in the post-fight interview, but he was anything but at the presser. I don't know if you guys saw this, right? But he basically was asking Gerald to retire if he was able to submit him. You know, Gerald's like, hey, do I get a wrestling trophy if I double leg takedown you? And the Khamzat's like, double leg takedown me? It's like, you think you're going to double like, just think that he, as his English improves, he's got that value too. He stole the goddamn show at the press conference. And of course you didn't have Colby and Tyron face to face like you wanted. So I don't know. I'm all in chips.
I think it's his lack of English that really makes that.
Really
makes the show, believe it or not. Cause when they have to search for words, cause I see it with a lot of guys, even I train, it brings another sense of realism to it. You know what I mean? They don't have the vocabulary to even bullshit. They just have to keep it simple. And that's what I love about even Khabib. If you ever hear him answer questions, just very honest and down to earth and humble and everything, you know? I see with Merab, they just cut right to the chase. You know, they don't have any other option. And I love it. I think that's what you're hearing from this guy. He's sincere in whatever he's saying. And it comes out funny because we're not used to, the way he speaks a little bit, but I think he's perfect the way he is. I love it.
Brother, I just want to kill, brother.
Right.
I just want to kill. Ray, you kind of alluded to something, and I think, it's an important thing because I kind of said the same thing, is that we learn way more about a fighter, when they deal with adversity, and we haven't seen that yet because at the end of the day, and I'm not saying this isn't the case, he could very well be the most game guy to enter the octagon, but we don't know what he's made out of yet. We haven't seen him struggle. We haven't seen him drop. We haven't seen him bloodied up. I imagine that he'll respond well, but experiencing that in training maybe or in other aspects of your life and experiencing that in the UFC's octagon when, the pressure is on is something that's just different. So I'm curious to see how he would respond in a tough fight.
Yeah, I'm just saying if I had to profile him now at this stage of the game, I'm kind of liking everything I'm seeing and hearing. That's all. And it's still premature, obviously, but there's like, again, there's a sense of these guys want to fight. That's the first thing, you know, because we could segue this into like, you know, Woodley against Covington. I just doesn't seem like Woodley. He doesn't have that. Like, let's go. Come on. This guy wants to fight every day. It's for real. He's not just saying it. He's doing it. And that's when you're coming up. That's the attitude you need. So I'm liking everything I'm hearing and seeing. Yeah. Like, again, he threw a beautiful right hand, had the guy moving right into it. I mean, he's not, that's not a lucky punch. You know what I mean? He must have had some zap on it because he put away a guy that I think is pretty durable. So they have to step him up a little bit and, and we'll see what happens to him. But these guys, the guys that really want to fight and are enjoying it, those are the guys that are a problem at this point.
Well, I can't wait to see.
Some guys are just going in for a paycheck. That's what I'm kind of saying. Like, there's,
right.
You know, what scared me with Woodley was that, you know, he just, his corner was giving him great advice. He just couldn't do it. And you know, he can do it. As a corner, you know he could do it. Look, he looked physically fit. You know, he's been there before. He was a champion. But, man, he's just he's struggling. We've talked about this a million times, Kenny. I don't know what the answer is. I've experienced it. But when you can't respond to the things that are being told to you, I think that's not a – that's a really bad sign.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the desire is still there. And we talk a lot about George St. Pierre, Kenny, your longtime friend and training partner, not liking fight night, right? But that's a different thing than we're dealing with here, right?
Oh, George totally
St. Pierre in his competitive prime never liked fight night, but that doesn't mean he didn't have what he needed once that door was locked behind him.
Absolutely. Listen, experiencing fear, experiencing an uneasiness about the situation is one thing. Being able to deal with it and collect yourself and face that challenge with courage and say, you know what, I'm going to go out there and just let it fly. We're just not seeing that from Tyron. And you know, at the end of the day, George St. Pierre was able to collect that nervousness and put out some of the best performance we have ever seen. And he became perhaps the greatest champion that we've ever seen. So it's tough. It's really tough to see it, especially when it's your friend. And, you know, I guess he's got some soul searching to do. And, you know, it'd be nice to see Tyron either, you know, just end his career or end his career on a high note and compete the way that I think everybody knows he can.
Yeah.
And GSP, look, it almost became part of his pre-fight ritual. It's kind of legendary that he would, you know, I think people experienced if they've been in the dressing room, well, you know, why am I doing this? They, you know, he would, but it was part of his, is almost like part of his shtick in a sense. And then he would go out and perform. So he's a good guy to talk to if you think that's what's happening. But I think this is totally different. Yeah. And I'm just saying, but I'm saying, I think this is totally different with these guys. I don't know. It's a weird bit. Like everybody has anxiety, I think, before the fight. I'll tell you an interesting story. They had, when Drago fought Phil Baroni, I was in the dressing room. I think it was Paul Bonatello. And I just hear the guy, he's throwing up in the bathroom. I mean, he is hacking. I'm like, I don't know who the hell I said. I go, man, dude, somebody's got to talk to. I mean, I didn't even know anybody. You know what I mean? Like, it was, somebody's got, no, he does this all the time. Because he does this all the time. It's just, and I mean, he was dry heaving in the bathroom. To me, you know, we were just new in the game. And I'm like, wow, this can't be good. But it was part of his thing, man. So, you know, I think those are different things, you know. So.
I threw up before a few high school basketball games. I'm not afraid to admit it, you know. Didn't necessarily parlay that into a great performance like some of these guys are able to do. But hey, putting a bow on Khamzat Chimaev, don't be surprised if your boy Chris Weidman ends up on the short list of names that they present to Khamzat Chimaev or vice versa. So fascinated, Ray, to see how you guys prepare for that monster, you know.
Yeah, I tell you, I would like that now. I mean, catch him at the beginning. Yeah, that's not a bad fight at all. Because, you know, that would be good. I would like that as a coach.
I know you. You got anything for us on Colby Covington before we move on? Just a brilliant fighter to me. And there's so much to this total package, right? And I know that he upset a lot of people this weekend. I just sometimes wish people could see the way he is in our fighter meeting, Ken Flo, right? Because he's just dripping with respect and he's so technical and giving us all this amazing stuff for the broadcast. And he's just a totally different guy. And, you know, I think maybe in some respects you could argue he took the act too far this weekend, Ray. But in terms of the in-octagon stuff, which is what our listeners care about the most. This guy's fucking awesome to watch and as good as any welterweight in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, he's proven he's coming to fight. You know, there's no, you know, he's got a great gas tank. That fight with Usman was, I don't remember. I mean, it was a great fight going back and forth, going into that fifth round. Anything could have happened. He's right where he wants to be. And it looks like, you know, he might, you know, we got to see if he can make the adjustments. But I'd like to see Usman and Kobe again. I think he proved it with this win. And, yeah, he's you know what you're getting into when you fight Kobe. He's coming. He's coming to fight, and he's going to do the same stuff over and over again. And he can, and he's good at it. So, you know what? He definitely earned his right to another title shot, as far as I'm concerned. What were people mad at him for?
Well, I think just there were some racial overtones with his back and forth with Kamaru Usman. But again, do we spend 5 minutes on that, or do we talk about Mackenzie Dern? You know what I'm saying? Like, Joe Osborne coming up in 10 minutes. So, Ken Flo, Duke Rufus said to me after this fight in Paul Felder's room that he feels like jiu-jitsu in the women's game is just of paramount importance because the power doesn't necessarily define the women's divisions as a generalization. And when it comes to jiu-jitsu, man, I could watch Mackenzie Dern all day, and now the preparation is aligning with the ability to look like a future champion to me. Ken Flo, lead us off on Mackenzie Dern, if you would.
I certainly think Duke has a point there. I also think time plays a huge factor into it. Her mom is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. Her dad is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. She's been doing jiu-jitsu shit since probably before she could walk. So how many women in mixed martial arts have that kind of experience? And I know it's just one domain. How many have that at a world-class level? Everyone, there's a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belts now. Very few world championship level Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belts like Mackenzie Dern. The same advantage that, you know, Ronda Rousey had, you know, some girl who did high school wrestling or someone who medaled in the Olympics. It's just a whole different ball of wax. And Mackenzie Dern has that advantage and always will have that advantage. And I also say, you know, we didn't see a whole lot of her on the feet, but she is looking sharper than what we've seen in the past. She looked like she was in better shape. I think she's maturing as a human and as a professional athlete now. So I think it's coming together for her at the right time, but she was nonstop attacking that girl. I mean, no matter what. And you love to see it. That is just a fluidity and an understanding that very few women in that division will ever have.
Yeah. Well, I mean, by far the best woman I've ever seen doing jiu-jitsu. And again, I think Kenny alluded to a lot of stuff, but she gets it. I think that's the key. Like, she's telling you, the way she's talking is like you're talking with one of those old school Brazilian instructors. You know, like when everybody first started doing jiu-jitsu, Kenny, like, she's explained. She made the adjustments. I was, you know, I pointed the thumb down. Then I moved to
Exactly.
He spoke in a way that, to me, and again, it's going to come off crazy. As a woman, that's scary. Like, she gets it. I was blown away by, again, yeah, the chaining or the fluidity, whatever you want to call it. She was good. That was no question what I'm looking at. That was special. That was really, really special. And like Kenny says, those her father was a really well-known Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt back in the day when there wasn't many around, right? Megaton Diaz, is that a father?
Yes, exactly.
And I know, like, years ago when I was bringing in a guy, Pedro Sauer, who's just I think Hickson's first black belt. What a great guy. And Kenny, if you ever get a chance to meet him, if you haven't, I really missed the guy. I hope he's listening, but was a great guy. He'd come out and do seminars. But Megaton Diaz was the other guy I think we were looking at. There really wasn't many people. So they start young, man. Like, you see all the old videos with the Gracies. You could be two or three. They're bouncing you, you know, they're bouncing you around. She's got great lineage. And she gets it. She really gets it. I thought, like you said, John, I could watch her all day long. You know what I mean? And she's special.
So a couple things very quickly on Mackenzie Dern. Please do yourself the service of watching her jiu-jitsu match against Gabby Garcia. Just Google it. Gabby Garcia, 100 pounds north of Mackenzie Dern. I won't spoil the result for you. I've watched it probably 10 times by now. Also, Ken Flo, when I sat down to interview Mackenzie Dern prior to her UFC debut against Ashley Yoder in March of 2018, she said she wanted to win the UFC title, defend it, and then go back to Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Now, I don't know if that still holds, but I thought it was very interesting to hear that at the time. She aligned with Jason Perillo 4 weeks ago. I think we're all excited to see the striking strides she makes. We didn't see a lot of that because out of necessity, but quick story. I guess one of her ex-coaches at Black House like got into a physical altercation with her husband, and that's why she moved on from Black House and is under the Ruka roof there with Jason Perillo. So it seems like a good alignment for Mackenzie Dern with Jason Perillo. Hey, Ray, in the nature of time, I got to get to you on the Nevada State Athletic Commission and the situation with Jessica Rose Clark and Sarah Alpar. Certainly not making it any easier on the broadcasters when they're essentially trying to change their rule set in the middle of the fucking evening. Yeah. Those who didn't see it, it was a legal knee that was paused by the referee Chris Tognoni and deemed an illegal knee. He had the benefit of replay, and then he resumed the fight. It should have been a TKO at that point in time. He's had several issues. He is one of these referees that loves to stop fights late, be a hero, and see the other guy rally. Bad night for the NSAC, Ray.
Yeah, I mean, if I tell you, I'm just totally confused. I didn't know what I was looking at. John, we could talk about
it. Tell you one thing then?
Yeah.
So basically, I read on broadcast, Ken Flo. So replay can be called upon, but only to look at a fight ending sequence. Once replay is called for, that particular fight cannot be restarted. Now the Nevada State Athletic Commission is saying that the fight can be restarted, and that rule was essentially changed mid-flight and was not in writing. So now they can call on replay and restart the fight. Comedy of errors, Ray.
No, I don't know, man. I don't want to go off the deep end again. You know, we've been here. We've been down this rabbit hole how many times, man, and nothing's happening. But kangaroo court, is that appropriate? I mean, just changing stuff on the fly. I had no idea what was happening. Like,
I have a hot microphone and I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. Like, did somebody tell him it was a legal knee? Is that what happened? And he just arbitrary. You see Bruce Buffer running at everybody scurrying out of the ring.
I don't know what Buff's doing in there, but it was very confusing. It seemed as though he caught a replay on an arena monitor and then recognized that Sarah Alpar's rear end was not on the canvas and then tried to reverse course, and it was disastrous.
Yeah, no, I just don't. Kenny, I'm telling you, this stuff is it's not even making a mistake. There's no correction. There's no accountability. We always say, use the word accountability. Can we just hear from these people so we know what's going on? Every time I go off the rails on this, I'm a hater. I'm a complainer, a crybaby. It's not just my guys. It's everybody. What do you do? I don't know. It's frustrating. That's why I can't even speak on it. I don't know what I was looking at. I didn't have no explanation. And honestly, that's a hard call to make because the rest looked like it was on the floor. What was it? An eighth of an inch? I mean, so that part you could understand. You could make a mistake easy. That what followed after that looked like insanity to me.
Yeah, and here's my issue with the whole thing. There's two major things that come out of this decision was, you know, first of all, so do we just stop the fight after any possible controversial blow? Like if it's kind of in the back of the head, I can just stop the fight at any time, go check out the video, go back. Oh, sorry, okay, you guys keep fighting. Like what happened to the other guy who had the momentum from that fight? Right. That is just ridiculous. Okay, that's the first thing that's really concerning because now it sets a precedent that really could actually change the sport moving forward. Okay. And number two, as far as the referee and all that stuff, like, so the only people responsible that have to basically, deal with an unfortunate circumstance are the fighters. There's no repercussions for the referees or the judges or anything. Zero. It's all on the fighters. If you get screwed, you get screwed. But a referee can make a bad decision, go back, essentially erase it. They'll change the rules that night. I mean, it's silliness. It's silliness from the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Sorry, but that's just a fact.
This is crazy, man. I mean, just make a decision and do the right thing. It's not that hard to do. But they're never at fault.
You'll never hear a commission guy say, oh, we made a mistake or this or that. It's horrible. But the fighters are the ones who's going to have that L by their name.
And I heard that that kid from Boston against Ed Herman, I heard his appeal was turned down. Won't even hear the appeal. Crazy. I thought that was a no-brainer. Just overturn it. Rule it. The other guy won. Period.
And that was the same referee, unfortunately.
What an unfortunate. Look, the only worst thing that could have happened to him this week is that Alpar came back and knocked out or choked out Jessica Rose Clark. But what I didn't like in that fight too is that the fight was over even without anything. I mean, that fight should have been stopped. She wasn't going to win that fight. And that's where it gets a little wacky. Like, they could have even went to the replay if it was I don't know. The fight should have been over. The fight was over. As far as I was concerned, the fight was over. And it's not really even right to do to Jessica Rose Clark after looking at her and then bringing her back in and making her just beat the ever-living shit out of somebody who's basically defenseless, man. I mean, that's not, you know— Like, you, these guys are there to fight. It's a competitive thing. It's a sport. That's bordering on just out maliciousness. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, I didn't even like them putting her in that position.
I agree.
You know,
I thought Jessica Rose Clark looked outstanding. And instead, we spent a lot of time talking about this and the finishing sequence. Yeah. And for Sarah Alpar, she's got 3 weeks to heal before her wedding, by the way. So, God love her showing up.
So you wanted to marry a fighter.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So we have only a few minutes left with you, Ray. I wanted to get to the Ryan Spann, Johnny Walker fight, and then time permitting some other performances. Saif Saud is one of my dear friends, the Fortis MMA head coach. I think he was a little bit upset that we did not acknowledge those elbows as maybe borderline when Johnny Walker was able to finish Ryan Spann. I thought they looked clean in real time. I still stand by the call. Ken Flo, I'll start with you. Disappointing conclusion of this one for Ryan Spann, who obviously had a couple of knockdowns there, but Johnny Walker endures under the new head coach, John Kavanaugh, and gets a nice one.
That was the most Johnny Walker thing that could have happened. It was just a classic kind of weird fight. I think John Jones kind of summed it up well. He said, nice bar fight, bro, or something to that effect. Yeah. Johnny Walker is just not a technical fighter and still kind of hasn't made certain adjustments that you'd like to see in a guy who is as physically gifted as he is. It went from Spann, almost getting the knockout, and then he rushed in foolishly only to get knocked out himself. And he did exactly what you shouldn't do. And for a guy who has a lot of experience, I thought he should have been a little bit more composed, as he went in for the kill. So unfortunate for Spann. Johnny Walker, again, kudos to him at least for showing the toughness to hang in there, readjust, and land those shots. To me, I agree with you, John. It looked like those were legal blows to me on the angles that I saw. So big win for Walker as far as, you know, how he was able to come back. But you want to see him get more technical and just make better decisions out there. And I guess you could say the same for Spann.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think Spann fight IQ, not good in that fight. I think he had him. He went in for the takedown. He put himself in that position. Those elbows to the temple are nothing short of vicious. And again, you get hit once, you got to abort and do something else. You know what I mean? He stayed in that position, which is confusing. And he shouldn't even have been in that position because he had Johnny Walker out and he should have just kept it striking. And for Johnny Walker, you know, I'll compare him to Pereira because they're both like crazy and mad hatters. Pereira looked phenomenal. He showed that he was able to control a fight and, put together combinations and show you that he's progressing and he doesn't have to be that. We did not see that from Johnny Walker. He was the same, exciting fighter. I don't know, whatever you want to call him. You know, he didn't make the adjustments and he almost lost that fight. And I think if Ryan Spann would have made better decisions, he's winning that fight. Regardless, before those elbows even came into play, they should have never even come into play. Because I think he had him backing up against the cage, and then he went for that takedown, and again, those elbows you cannot play with, man. I've seen, I think Al was knocked out and woke up one time in a Ring of Combat fight with that same stuff. Those shots are bad, man. And that everybody should be using them, and everybody else should be avoiding them as much as possible, because they're not, it's no joke. So I didn't really see anything illegal, but I just know that's a bad shot.
Yeah. All right, before we let you go, Donald Cowboy Cerrone and Nico Price fight to a majority draw in the co-main event, Ray. Cerrone is now winless in his last five, just four wins in his last 13 fights. I felt like he looked better defensively. I thought he was moving his head well. He was able to absorb some shots, so I do think there was some good in there. He seemed obviously disappointed because he's not trying to draw with guys. What are your thoughts on Cerrone and his fighting future that seems to be a little bit in question, at least according to some?
Well, I'll tell you what an entertaining fight that was with those two guys. I tell you, I get a kick out of Nico Price, man.
I do too, man.
You can't, like even with the eye pokes, you know, it's not malicious with him. He's just at it. Even when he got eye poked, it was fun. You know, like we both poked each other in the eye. It was almost like that scene out of, remember the old Police Academy where the cop would beat up his son? They'd start beating the piss out of each other. It almost reminded me of that. But Cerrone did, you know, look, he did last that first round. He survived the barrage. I thought that was the best thing he did. And then he came back with some good stuff. So I think he's proven a lot of people wrong. I think his chin held up better than I thought it would in that fight. And again, for Cerrone, it's, you know, how much damage do you want to take at this point? You know what I mean? Do I have enough money to retire? Or, you know, I mean, he obviously likes to fight, but I think it's coming with a heavy price now. You know what I mean? He's not getting out of any of these fights unscathed. And I think he's got to be careful, but he did hang in there and he did come back. And, you know, without those eye pokes, I don't know what happens. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, like, did that really affect him at all? Or, you know, I think that's why Nico was happy with a draw, because in his head, he must have been thinking, without the eye poke, I won. And I didn't do it on purpose. I didn't purposely eye poke him. So I'm sure his rationale was he went right to a win in his head.
Kenny, what'd you think of the co-main?
Yeah, you know, I think Ray said a lot of what I thought. I think that, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, look at the result here. I look at the performance, and I think Cerrone was way more of his old self than he was in kind of previous fights. And, you know, the losses are one thing, but the performances are another thing. I didn't think that he was too flat. Yes, it was a little bit of a slow start yet again for Donald Cerrone. I thought that he held up well. I know he said he wanted to kick more and just for whatever reason, he just didn't. You got to think that I think some of his training habits are maybe catching up with him a little bit, that, again, you do what you're going to do in the fight, what you do in training. And I think that those things might be catching up with Donald. Maybe he needs a new coach injected into the situation or whatever it is. But, you know, how do you hate either of those guys? Both those guys just love to fight. They love to deliver excitement. They delivered an awesome fight. It was entertaining through and through. And both those guys are just good human beings. If you saw the interview with Megan O'Leary, yeah. I think, you know, those guys really showed that in that interview.
And Ray, John, I'm sure you'll agree with this, John. Like, you've met Nico Price, you've interviewed. He's the same guy when you're talking to him as he is in the octagon. Like, there's no bullshit about that guy. Oh, that's
he's
correct,
the best. Huh? No, we sent him an Anakin Florian podcast Fight Island t-shirt before they were unceremoniously pulled from the shelves. And I will say, too, I pride myself on being a fun father, right? Like, my house is crazy. I'm a lunatic. I'm an idiot at home, okay? Let's be honest, right? My daughter's going to look back. What was that guy doing? And then they'll know exactly what I was doing. But can you imagine how fun a father Nico Price is? I mean, I don't know why anyone needs five children, but
five kids.
Yeah, unbelievable. You imagine the life fun?
He's got the energy for five kids for sure. No,
he does. Yeah, that's a good point. He said too. He's like, if you think I'm the one doing the distance learning, you're fucking crazy. Like, you think I'm sitting down with my daughter and helping her with her third grade math? Get the fuck out of here. All right, Ray. Hey, we got to go, man. But it's always good to see you. And I look forward to being back stateside, and we'll reconvene next Monday night, my brother.
All right, my man. Stay safe over there and take care of the terror for me, please.
Matt Serra will be priority number one.
If you find a real slice of pizza, will you promise me you'll just stuff it down his throat? Say it for me.
I will do that. right over, the, right underneath the mask. Yeah, all right, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Get some gluten stuff and write gluten-free on it.
Sprinkle it on them. Sprinkle it on them. Yeah, good.
Take it easy.
See you,
Ray. You guys have fun, man.
All right, I don't want to keep Joe Osborne from Odd Shark waiting too much longer, Ken Flo, but I want to congratulate Randy Cost out of Taunton, Massachusetts. Great head kick knockout for him and the accompanying bonus. And then Damon Jackson over Mirsad Bektic by submission. Damon Jackson is 18-3-1 with a no contest. He's won 7 of 8. He's a UFC caliber fighter. And cardiovascularly, he put himself in position to take a short notice opportunity against someone who's like number 16 or 17 in the world. And the other side of this, Ken Flo, is the Firas Sahabi trained Mirsad Bektic, who has now lost 3 in a row on paper. And there are people who believe he should have gotten the nod against Dan Ige. You know, that was a fight that happened back in February, but Bektic, man, you know, all the GSP comparisons, this guy was thought by many to be destined for greatness. And it just speaks to the ruthlessness of this sport and this division that all of a sudden he wakes up and his Wikipedia page has got 3 red stripes on it this morning.
It's a testament to just how difficult this sport is. You know, you zig when you should have zagged, and that's it. You know, you got an L by your name. And for Bektic, I think he was doing a good job of keeping the pressure, but he did not pace himself properly. You got to know yourself and you got to know the speed at which you're supposed to be going here. And I just felt like maybe he was disrespecting Damon Jackson a little bit. Jackson is tough as hell, tough as nails, hung in there, was attacking with those guillotines throughout the fight. And then Bektic ended up getting caught again. You know, yes, he was winning the fight, but you can still be making mistakes even though you're winning the fight, and you better be making those adjustments even if you're winning the fight. And it seemed like Bektic just kind of had blinders on, kept doing the same exact thing. There was nothing that he was going to switch up, and he paid for it. Damon Jackson was the one who ended up making the proper adjustments as far as finishing that technique, and got the win and showed a hell of a lot of heart in that process. And the fact that he's a huge featherweight and made that weight, that was impressive. Doing it in 3-4 days notice, that was impressive. Coming back the way he did, I mean, what else can you say? That was pretty awesome, man.
And I'm glad you highlighted making weight, because that might have been the most impressive thing he did, right, in putting himself in position. And then, the fresher guy at the end of the fight, Saif Saud, deserves a lot of credit. You know, Damon Jackson hasn't missed a training session, and here he is back in the UFC, and big payday for him, and we congratulate a good man there. All right, a lot to get to on UFC 253, Adesanya versus Costa coming up here on UFC Fight Island this weekend. Let us get to the pick to click.
Time now for the pick to click. The pick to click.
All I have to do is bet on the winner, and I'll never lose.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
All right, the pick to click for UFC 253 is brought to you by OddShark.com. OddShark is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks with expert in-depth analysis for each game. Their free statistics, numbers, and trends will help you make the sharp picks on game day. Head over to OddShark and start playing like a shark today. It's OddShark.com. Don't forget the second S. And now joining us, a sports betting analyst for OddShark.com. I'm tailing this guy all day on Instagram. Now you can find him at Paper Chaser Joe. Joe Osborne is with us. My man, Joel, it's good to see you. Dude, I love the energy you're bringing on Guys and Bets and on Instagram. I mean, you get me right in with that just ball of energy right out of the chute.
Well, guys, you know, now is the time, completely just overwhelmed with sports, which means I'm overwhelmed with work, but that means I'm overwhelmed with happiness. You know, the first part of the summer, when we didn't have, and you know, the tail end of spring there too, when we didn't have the 7-day-a-week sports, we just had the weekend sports to get us through. You know, thankfully, the UFC, NASCAR, and a little bit of golf were there for us on the weekends, but you know, you can only watch much Netflix, Monday through Friday type of thing. So that got old pretty quick. So, full throttle here, right through the rest of the NFL season. You know, this is absolutely insane. The NBA is peaking right now, NHL, Stanley Cup Finals, Major League Baseball, final week of the regular season. Then we're going to get into their expanded playoffs, NFL Week 3, college football ramping up, UFC Fight Island, of course. So this is just outrageous. I love it.
It really is. It's as good as it gets. It means a lot of deposits for me because I'm not on a good stretch. And by the way, at JTFOZ on Twitter, you'll find a lot of Joe's content and a lot of free plays out there from a very sharp guy. I know you're waiting on some props now to be released for some of the UFC 253 matchups, but your appetite for this main event obviously is as healthy as ours. It's Israel Adesanya and Paulo Costa. Right now, Adesanya in the minus 165 range, Costa around plus 145, depending on where you're looking. But for you, wherein lies the value on this headliner, and will you have a play?
I have two plays. There's two spots that I like in this fight, actually, so aside and the total. And, you know, like a lot of people out there, when a big fight is first announced, you kind of play odds maker a little bit, right? And I thought to myself, if Adesanya, I was guessing he would be anywhere between minus 180, minus 160, and here we are at minus 165. So I think that's a fair number, and I'm going to bet on him. Now, you guys don't need me to sit here and gush over this guy and tell you how great he is, regurgitate, you know, what everyone else is going to say this week. It's all true. You know, he's a very special talent, but this pick, it's just as much a fade of Costa as it is a support of Adesanya. So we know Costa, he has kind of this style, take a punch to land a punch. And this, that's a god awful approach versus a guy like Adesanya. You know, he has that Conor McGregor, like touch of death. If he hits you in the right spot, right, he's going right to turn you right off. And Costa, he's full throttle from the opening bell, right? And we've seen this kind of work against him. It works for him against kind of lower level fighters, but, you know, he fades a little bit and it affects his cardio. And in turn, it does affect his defense. So check out these numbers in his most recent fight versus Yoel Romero, where that fight was just full throttle first from the opening bell to the end of the third round. First round, he absorbed 32 significant strikes. Second round, he absorbed 40 significant strikes. Third round, he absorbed 53. So the longer the fight goes, he tends to get worse defensively. Now, that's just a small sample size, but we don't have a whole lot to work off of with Costa here. So the longer fight, I think it favors Adesanya. So the key for him, I think it's going to be to get out of the first round. That's easier said than done, right? But I think if he can use that 80-inch reach that he has and keep a little bit of distance, I think that's going to work in his favor. So my favorite bet for this fight, I think, and this is the best value, the over-under rounds is set at 2.5. And I like the over coming in at minus 125. So first of all, an organizational-wide trend that really caught my attention here for the UFC. So there's been 13 title fights in the UFC in 2020 so far. 9 of those went over the 2.5 round mark. Also, 11 of the last 14 non-title main events have also gone over the 2.5 round mark. So what's the deal with that? And I think it's real common sense here. If you're in a UFC main event, you're probably a pretty good fighter and you're probably one of the best in your weight class. So with that said, you're going to be hard to put away inside of the 12.5 minute mark. So it kind of makes sense that, you know, when it's the best fighting the best, that they're going to have longer fights. And, you know, you're not going to see a person get their ass kicked early, essentially. Now, we do see that from time to time, but when it's best versus the best, it tends to be a bit of a longer fight. So that said, that's an organizational-wide trend. You still have to look at each matchup individually, and I think this kind of applies to this one. So what's obvious going into this fight? Well, both guys are undefeated. Neither of them has ever been finished in their professional career. And even you look at Adesanya, his professional kickboxing career, 80 fights, he was KO'd once. Right. I don't have a calculator, but that's a pretty small percentage right there. And, you know, you look at Adesanya's in the UFC so far, he's has 8 fights. He's gone to decision 5 times, including 3 separate decisions and 5 round fights. He tends to start a little bit slow. I don't know if he's going to have the luxury of that feeling out process versus Costa here, but maybe Costa might change his game plan a little bit too. So I like the value on that over 2.5 at minus 125.
I like the way you set that up, because I had someone say to me recently, I'm so sick of getting burned on these main event decisions. I'm just going to start betting on every UFC main event to go over whatever the round total is, 2.5, 3.5, 4.5. But it's interesting for you to sort of provide that organizational backdrop, because for me, as a guy who sort of boots on the ground for all these shows, that that sort of aligns with what I'm watching. All right, before we let you go, I know you're on the Raiders on Monday Night Football tonight, as am I, +5.5 in the Circa Millions competition. Capper Cup, by the way, live on oddshark.com. But as you look ahead to week 3, anything that jumps off the board so I can put my bet down as soon as we get off the air?
Yeah, first of all, a very interesting league-wide trend to share in the NFL going into week 3. So over the last 4 seasons, teams that start 0-2 ATS are a combined 22-7 ATS in week 3. So who does this apply to this week? the Jets, Browns, Titans, Texans, Cowboys, Eagles, Lions, Vikings, and Panthers. Now, who wants to put a bet in on the Jets, right? Who wants to put a bet in on the Texans, right? Who wants to put a bet in on the Lions, the Vikings? But, you know, usually if you feel very comfortable with your NFL bets, those ones usually don't work out very well for you, right? Like, ask anyone who bet on the Chiefs going into the game against the Chargers. They probably had a whole lot of confidence going into that one. I was lucky. I had them on a teaser, so I was very lucky. I kind of got away a little bit lucky on that one, so... You know, you take a look at a team like the Jets, who I probably won't be betting on, but they're up to the biggest underdog of the week, plus 11 versus a Colts team that got upset by the Jaguars in week one, right? So the NFL, it's a week-to-week league, right? So it's very unpredictable. But just one second. Need a drink of water.
You take your time.
So the Battle of Florida here, John. Thursday night football, the sexiest game of the week. Dolphins-Jags, right?
Right.
And I think the Dolphins are being undervalued here at plus three. So look at the competition Miami has faced so far this season. Two of the top five defenses from last season. I don't think a lot of people expected them to win in New England in week one, right, against Belichick. And then maybe a little bit of a coin flip game that they could have won versus Buffalo.
Sure.
In week two, they're at home. That was a very close game. Now, the Jags, you got to give them credit, a bit of a surprise start, but we've had the wool pulled over our eyes before by the Minshew magic, right?
Yeah.
So
this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. So when you are at your best, you can do great things, but sometimes life gets you bogged down and you may feel a touch overwhelmed. Perhaps you're not showing up the way that you would like to. I can certainly relate. You know, there's a phrase in the song, there's no business like show business. And it says there's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. And for me, being in the public eye has been challenging, at least in terms of always projecting happiness when perhaps that's not how I'm feeling. Well, whatever your situation, working with a therapist can help you get closer to the best version of you. And when you feel empowered, you're more prepared to take on everything that life throws your way. For me, it's imperative that I'm my best self in order to just perform at a high level. And when I don't feel that way, BetterHelp is a great option and a great resource for therapy. It's convenient, flexible, affordable, and entirely online. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. That gets you matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch out anytime for no additional charge if you're not happy. For me, I'm on the road about 100 nights a year, so being able to connect with someone remotely was absolutely huge for me. And my mindset really candidly has changed for the better. So if you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/AnnickFlorian today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/AnnickFlorian.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Main Event Challenge.
Florian. I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The Main Event Challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Oh, I've been waiting for this Main Event Challenge for a long time, and today it's sponsored by DraftKings. Man, is it great to have football back. Fortunately, the season is just getting started, and it can be said there is no better place to get in on all of the action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. And to add to this week's excitement, DraftKings has millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs, so if you haven't tried DraftKings yet, head to the App Store right now because you don't want to miss this. And for guys like me, this is just a great way to have action. It's pretty simple. Draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, see how your team stacks up with your friends, the other competition. And I can assure you the games are going to be a lot more compelling when you have a shot at millions of dollars in prizes. DraftKings has actually paid out billions to winners dating to 2012. So they know a thing or two, not unlike Ian Parker, about cold, hard cash. So download the DraftKings app now. Use code AFPOD. And for a limited time, new users can get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this week. Don't miss out on the week three action. Enter code AFPOD to get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes with your first deposit. That's code AFPOD only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for more details. And it is time to make some picks for UFC 253 as we call on the duck, Ian Parker. Before we get there, we need to hear the pronunciation of the week, Cody Mero. This guy is fighting Hakeem Dawodu in the featherweight main card opener on pay-per-view. Of whom am I speaking, Cody Mero?
You are speaking of Zubaira Tuhugov.
Pretty close. Let's hear how he says it.
Zubaira to Hugo.
So Cody falls to 1-2. You said Zubaira. It's Zubaira. Ken Flo, am I pulling hairs here? Splitting hairs here?
I agree with you, man. I agree with you. Cody's got some work to do the next couple weeks. Cody, he'll be back.
I ain't got nothing to say. I mean, Kenny says I'm wrong. That's all it is. Got to be better next time.
All right. Here 2-4. Ken Flo's scorecard is the only one that matters for the pronunciation of the week.
We win or we learn.
The Duck. It is nice to see you, my friend. I wish I was there in South Florida. I'm here in Abu Dhabi. It is 3:16 a.m. How you doing?
It's not 3:16 here, but no, you know what? Weather's a little nice. It stopped raining a few minutes ago, and I'm really looking forward to hear the new scores of the main event challenge. So why don't we get to that?
Well, let's get to it. We will update it. So Team Florian led it 115-113, but Team Anik with our captain, Ian Parker, wins the week 7-4. The big hits. You both had Khamzat Chimaev by TKO, but Ian had round one, so an extra point there. And you also had Colby Covington. Again, Ken Flo just keeps picking his friends no matter what he thinks of the matchup. I love you, Ken Flo. I'm just kidding. all right, so it is 120-119 as Team Anik regains control of the board. Nicely done, Ian. And that means Ken Flo is going to lead the dance on the first fight this week. Main card opener at featherweight. What a contest this could be. Zubaira to Hugo, -115. Slightly favored for our purposes against Hakeem Dawodu, who is -105. So you got just one loss in six UFC fights all told for Tohugov. Stopped Kevin Aguilar back in February before COVID-19 intervened. On the other side, Flo, Canada could really use a Dawodu win. It's been a rough stretch for our UFC friends in the Great White North. What do you think here? Dawodu's won four straight. How does he match up with Tohugov?
You know, I think this is a really interesting fight, and I definitely think it's going to deliver excitement, excitement-wise. I think both guys are going to go for it. Dawodu, though, I think he's going to struggle if this fight goes to the mat. I think Zubaira is going to be able to, either get a submission there or be effective with his ground and pound. So I like the Russian in this fight.
All right, Ian, what do you think about the pay-per-view opener, my friend?
I'm going opposite. I'm going to Dawodu. I think Zubaira in the I definitely pronounced that wrong.
I love when you talk about Hakeem Dawodu fights and you say like Dawodu. You sound like a fucking Flintstone.
You know what? I was gonna go just Hakeem, but I was so confident that if I go fast, you wouldn't pick up on it. You weren't even fucking looking at me and you kicked me off right there. John, I got us back in the lead. I think I get like a thing. Yes. Whoa, what the fuck was that? Sorry, I got a pool club on hit me in the head. So I think Hakeem, this is a good fight for him with Zubaira. He's only fought three times in the last 3 years, and he's gone 1-1-1, right? And that one fight where he went to a draw, I actually thought he lost that fight. I thought that was a poorly scored fight. I think with Hakeem, the only problem is that he starts off a little slow. That last fight, that first round did not go his way. He did pick it up with the leg kicks. I think here, if he can keep the fight standing, he's got the better striking. I think he's got more power. Zubaira does not take these fights to the ground as much as he should until he's in trouble. And I think if he gets in trouble in this fight, he goes lights out. So I'm going Hakeem in this one. Not even trying for that last name again.
All right. Don't want to shortchange these next two pay-per-view fights, but with two title fights on the back end, the less time you'd go on these fights, the more you'll have for the title fights, gentlemen. At bantamweight, Tajara Eubanks, the +150 dog, stepping in for Marion Renault against Ketlin Vieta. Vieta, the -170 favorite. So Eubanks, Ian, just won a fight 10 days ago against Julia Avila. Your thoughts on the quick turn here for Sarge?
Yeah, I understand it. She came, she won, didn't take any damage. I think this is a different demon, though. I think you got a Ketlin Vera who's going to come out really angry, really mean. I think she's a lot stronger on the ground, good grappler, has fought really good grapplers in Sarah McMahon and in Kajingano. So I'm going to go Ketlin Vera here.
All right, Ketlin Vieta, the pick to click for Ian Parker. She's only had one pro loss, Ken Flo. It did come in her last fight against Irene Aldana. She was knocked out in round one last year. She'll try to bounce back here against the Springfield, Massachusetts-born Sajara Eubanks. What do you think, Flo?
Yeah, listen, I think Aldana was a very tough matchup for Vieira the last time out. I don't think it's the same kind of matchup here against Eubanks. I think Sajara is very tough. I think that she's a solid grappler. She's been getting a lot of momentum and staying active and all that stuff. But I just think that Ketlin is just a little bit too well-rounded. And she's got the ground game and the wrestling, I think, to keep the fight where she needs to have it. So I like Vieira here by decision.
All right, next up, featured bout on pay-per-view at 125 pounds. Sees City Kickboxing's Kai Kata-France entrenched here as a -230 betting favorite. He takes on Brandon Royval, who's +190. Ian, 6 UFC start here for Kai Kata France, all inside of 2 years. What do you think about this spot here against Brandon Royval?
I love Kai Kata France in this fight. I think this is a tailor-made matchup for him. I think with Brandon Royval, if that's how you pronounce it, I'm always now second-guessing myself.
Royval.
His last fight against Tim Elliott, you know, I think he kind of lucked out, and Tim Elliott beat Tim Elliott in that one. I don't think here he's finding a guy that makes any mistakes. I think he fights a very sound kickboxer with great cardio. I like Kai Kara France here a lot. Probably is one of my locks of the night, to be honest.
Ken Flo, Royval, that win in his UFC debut by submission against Tim Elliott was not all that long ago on May 30th. In this coronavirus climate, what do you think about this one at flyweight, kid?
Listen, I agree with Ian as far as the pick. I don't think I'm as confident as he is, though. I think Royval definitely has some skills. I think he's game. I think he's scrappy. And I think he's probably the better fighter on the ground, I think, as far as submissions go. But I agree with Ian that Kai Kara France is one of those guys that doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes. He's a very disciplined fighter. Has really matured in the UFC, I feel like, a little bit more. And I like him to win by decision as well.
All right, next up, co-main event for the vacant light heavyweight title. The fight nobody's talking about because the main event is so goddamn good. Dominic Reyes, minus 260, taking on Jan Błachowicz, who is plus 220. I'll set it up a little bit for you fellas, and then we'll have Ken Flo lead here. So Reyes came up just short, of course, against John Jones back in February, a fight many people thought he won. He did express some frustration, Kenny, that he only had about 5 weeks to prepare for this title fight. So not trying to admit or dismiss that as evidence necessarily, but he did express that publicly. The title shot here comes against Poland's Jan Błachowicz, who continues to get better, man, despite being 37 years old. A 4-straight win here would give Poland its second UFC champion. What do you think about Błachowicz as the plus 220 dog here against Dominic Reyes?
Man, I think Jan is a really tough dude. I just don't like the fact that he does get hit a lot or can get hit a lot in his fights. I think that if he can make this fight a little bit more scrappier, if he can make it more of a brawl, I like his chances. I just don't think Reyes is going to play that game. I think he's going to go out there, utilize that jab, try to keep Błachowicz on the outside, and look for a chance to try to land that cross that he throws so well, whether it's moving forward or moving back. I think Reyes is going to outpoint Błachowicz throughout this fight, and I like him by decision in this one.
All right, Dominic Reyes, the pick for Ken Flo to leave as the UFC light heavyweight champion. Only Americans and Brazilians have ever held the UFC's light heavyweight title. So, Ian, how about this number for you? April 8th, 2017, I walk out of the arena in Buffalo, UFC 210, and Jan Błachowicz is 2-4 in the UFC, perhaps in danger of being cut. And now look at him, right? He's won 7 of 8. What kind of chance do you give him here? Some people think he's a live underdog.
Yeah, it's hard to not say he isn't. I think plus 220 is a little wild. I didn't see that happening with this fight. But luckily with the main event challenge, we don't have to worry about that too much. So if you want to strip it down to no lines, I do like Dominic Reyes here. I think his athleticism is going to be the big deal here. I really do. His cardio as well. Jan Błachowicz, you know, the fight against Rockhold, he landed, you know, against Corey Anderson, he landed. As Kenny says to me through text, it's hard to really get an idea of how a guy performs when he lands that one money shot, right? I think we've seen just more out of Dominic Reyes overall in the greater landscape than we've seen Jan Błachowicz. And I just think that Reyes is the real deal. I think he's done what everyone's asked him to do. The John Jones fight, I think we all were really looking forward to that rematch, to seeing if he really decisively would have beat John. So for that reason, I'm also going Dominic Reyes. I don't see either guy finishing the other, so I'm also going decision.
All right, that brings us to the main event for the undisputed UFC middleweight championship. I kind of want to just get really fucking loud as I set this fight up, but I don't want to wake anybody. Israel Adesanya, minus 165. Paulo Costa is plus 145. At Anik Florian Pod poll results, about 4,000 votes prior to air today. 63.1% of you believe Paulo Costa will become the new champ. 36.9% on Adesanya. Second title defense for Izzy. He'll tell you it's the third, of course, because he did have that interim belt going into the Whitaker fight. But Costa's UFC career, Ian, it's been defined by power, ferocity, but also inactivity. He's fought just twice since competing 3 times in his first year on the roster back in 2017. So the matchup seems too good to be true. It's 13-0 versus 19-0. Ultimately, we need a pick, Ian Parker. Which way are you going?
I actually am quite surprised that the voters, the fans are going that heavy on Paulo Costa. I think it's kind of weird. Israel Adesanya has decisively beaten everybody's fight except the Romero fight. We all know that was a little funky, obviously. Look, Paulo Costa in that fight against Romero, people are kind of looking at it based on what I'm reading, like, oh, he didn't get taken down so easy. He took his best shot. He also fought really not intelligently in that fight. It was more of who was going to go down first. It was just a really tough guy, jacked up muscle version of Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Adesanya is going to be the way more skilled striker. He's going to be the way more intellectual fighter in this fight. Strategy-wise, everything. You know, I don't think Paulo Costa is going to take him to the ground. I think bull rushing someone like Adesanya. Look, Adesanya has been kickboxing for how long? You don't think he's seen someone like this before? I know everyone takes a look at Costa and says, man, how does he get to 185? Shit, I want to know how he gets to 185 and feels good. But something about this fight, I think people are blowing the power thing way out of proportion also. Act like Izzy can't take a shot. You know, I don't know where everyone's getting this information from. It's not a knock on Paulo Costa. I would have liked to have seen him fight Jared Cannonier here before this fight, to be honest with you. I would have liked to see him fight maybe one or two more. I know the schedule and the hype and the rivalry, even though maybe it was a marketing thing, but I don't see Adesanya losing this fight anywhere. Unless he gets knocked out, I really don't see that happening. I just think he's too smart. I don't, emotional-wise, he doesn't get too invested once the fight happens. And I think he's going to win by decision.
Ken Flo, I'm a lot higher on Paulo Costa than Ian Parker. I agree with parts of that analysis, but I would respectfully disagree when it comes to this championship opportunity. I think this Brazilian is ready. As to whether or not he capitalizes, I don't know. But Ken Flo, your thoughts on the UFC middleweight title fight and ultimately who you think wins it?
You know, I think Paulo Costa, he's going to come in with a style that is always going to be dangerous for anyone. I just think that, you know, a lot of what he throws, in my opinion, are kind of more arm punches. It doesn't mean he can't knock you out, and it doesn't mean he's not going to hurt you. But, you know, if you're knocking out guys like Uriah Hall, you know, a Johnny Hendricks that was past his prime, Bombo Shea, you know, those aren't the kind of guys that I go, okay, well, listen, we need to be paying attention to Paulo Costa here. And it's no offense to those other guys. Just we haven't seen Paulo Costa face high-level guys and knock them out. His fight against Yoel Romero was awesome. It was impressive as hell. But I just don't like the way he matches up against someone like Israel Adesanya, who is the consummate counter-striker. You get a guy in Paulo Costa who's going to move forward. That's why Adesanya is licking his lips, in my opinion. I think he's super excited about that matchup. He's facing an undefeated fighter who everyone's very hyped on. But I think he's going to get set up to look very good after this fight. In my opinion, I like Adesanya by round one knockout. I think he's going to look very good. And he's going to be an even bigger superstar than he is.
Absolutely incredible. And I will add to the conversation that most of the sharps, like Ken Flo, like Ian Parker, Yanni the Greek, Joe Osborne, all the sharps are on Israel Adesanya. I don't know where this is going to close. Most of those sharp minds believe that it was improperly priced, even though Osborne thought it was properly priced. But 63% of our listeners like Paulo Costa. So we shall see on Saturday night on social media. He is at Ian Parker MMA. It's nice to see you, Duck. Go channel your inner Khamzat Chimaev and hit a heavy bag, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks, huh?
Oh, dude, my man. Can I just say something about that insane demon real quick before I leave?
Yep.
I really hope that I'm surprised we didn't get a report that Damian Maia didn't test positive for COVID yet to save him from this fight. This is not something they should do to that man. The guy is 40. Let him fight someone in a Legends fight. Don't let him get put to sleep, literally, by this insane beast, Chimaev. Let Chimaev fight Mike Perry. Let him fight a Michelle Fajita. Let him fight someone that is not going to be afraid to come forward and swing. I'm telling you, this kid is something special, but let's get him some matches with some names now, because GM3 was a good overall fighter. One punch, we didn't even get to see anything else. That sound, John, I got to ask you, and I promise I'll let you go. Sitting there, no fans, no nothing. Did that punch make you throw up when you heard this?
It was insane. I mean, low on the table. I was just like, oh, I'm getting
paid
for
this. I was waiting for Kane to be like, how does coach let them get hit like that?
Good stuff, buddy. Right. Enjoy the pay-per-view. I'll see you in South Florida on the Mitts next week, okay?
You got it, bro. Later, guys.
All right. Ian Parker. with us for the main event challenge. All right, as many of you know, before we get out of here, Cody and I are going head-to-head this NFL season. Loser takes 5 shots of an alcohol of the winner's choosing in 20 minutes live on the air. So Anik was 1-0. Mara was 0-1 going into week 2. I gave you another winner on the Seattle Seahawks -4 to move to 2-0. Cody and I also love Jacksonville. It was +11 when we were on the air, and they cashed easily at the closing number, +7.5. Cody gave you the Ravens -6.5. An outstanding play that cash with relative ease. So Team Anik 2-0. Mero is 1-1. Mr. Mero, who do you have in week 3, kid?
Well, I'm going to recover here from failing on the damn pronunciation of the week because of Kenny, but damn, man. I mean, if these eyes and the smile can't get this by, maybe we bring on, you know, Heidi or something to start doing the judging, because I can't buy a win from Kenny. So maybe it's a New England thing. Anyway, Arizona Cardinals -5.5, John. I'm not going to sit here and rest on the spread numbers again. They're 2-0 against the spread. Detroit's 0-2 against the spread. Not where my data comes from today. Detroit ranks in the bottom 5 for both defensive yards per game and opposing points per game, 28th and 30th respectively. Arizona, top 6 in both of rushing and passing categories. They're top 5 in rushing, top 6 in passing yards per game. I think you see a great offense here. Sophomore Kyler Murray, just incredible with new up and DeAndre Hopkins. I think you're going to see more of the same. Matt Patricia, what are you doing? Former Patriot, you're in the Bill Belichick coaching tree. You're not making us look good. So Cardinals -5.5.
All right, Cody likes the Arizona Cardinals behind Kyler Murray -5.5. All right, so I'm going to say to listeners right now, I'm doing this because I want to see Cody get drunk on the air, but I did not watch a single NFL snap. I was in the air the entire time. So if you're looking to follow this bet, you may want to fade it. But I did look at the board, and I like the Atlanta Falcons -3 home to the Bears. 2-0 team here is the underdog against the 0-2 team, but I think Dan Quinn is coaching for his job this weekend. And I just don't see the Chicago offense keeping up with Atlanta's. I really don't. I like the Dirty Birds to win by 4 or more. Falcons -3, my pick to click for week 3. Also kind of like the Packers +4 at the Saints, who play tonight on Monday Night Football. All right, we got to get on out of here. Thank you to our guests, Ray Longo, Ian Parker, Joe Osborne. Our producer is Cody Mero, of course. Next week, right when we get back from Fight Island, we'll get you a new episode, full recap of UFC 253, Bohashinya, or the last style bender. We'll see who is the middleweight champion by next Monday. Also, don't forget our new video-only offering. It's called Remember the Show, starring UFC welterweight contender Bilal. Remember the name Muhammad. Also, my identical twin brother, Jason Anik. Cody is along for the ride, and they're live every Thursday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Anik and Florian Podcast YouTube channel. And they might even have Ken Flo as a guest this week. So hopefully you can tune in for that. With all of that, for the man, Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Thank you all for listening, watching, subscribing. Your support does not go unnoticed. AnikFlorianPodcast.com for merchandise and so very much more. Until next week, enjoy the fights. Don't text and drive. Yo, later.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.